Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it was a grueling test indeed at the Honda Classic. Extremely wind-filled, very gusty, blustery all around. But the bottom line, Mike, my picks are red hot. We'll get into that. I had another winner and some interesting developments with the Premier Golf League. That's right. Another tour, a competition to the PGA Tour for professional golfers out there. It's getting weird on the internet, and some Tom Brady free agency speculation, baseball talk, Super Tuesday recap, and a whole lot more. Plus, this week's guest is Mark Williamson, a.k.a. the Golf Yogi. A really cool chat with a former professional golfer who is big into the fitness game now. He shares some really cool tips. We talk a little barbecue and a whole lot more. But first, Michael, as you know, we're in 2020. We've made it. It's an election year again, which is crazy to say.
It is.
That time is really flying now. And we always got to keep updated. You and I are watching results right now as we record on Super Tuesday. And
literally, our phones are right just now
attached to us all day long, even when we're out there on the golf course. So they need a place to sit for 18 holes. And the bottom line is that Desert Fox Phone Caddy is the go-to phone holder where your phone needs to sit for 18 holes to keep it safe and at your fingertips. With sliding wings and a faceplate, it adjusts to fit any smartphone model. It velcros right on in seconds, so you can keep your yardage and scoring apps open where you need them to be seen, play music with ease, and watch your game on the phone and answer texts and calls all easily while you hit the course. The Phone Caddy is the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. So go to DesertFoxGolf.com. Again, that's DesertFoxGolf.com to get yours today. They have different colors, customized options, and phone caddies that benefit great charitable causes as well. Again, that is DesertFoxGolf.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to another edition of Course of Life, presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Joint Caddy, and Groovit Golf. This is the podcast where we talk about everything happening in the world of golf, plus other things that interest us in the world of sports and pop culture. I'm Michael, he's Alex, and Alex, it was the Honda Classic at PGA National. There were a lot of guys who did not play this past weekend, even though they could just walk out and play. But this PGA National decided to bring the wind and just go all crazy on everyone. And I'm now going to turn to you whenever I need a decision, because you're picks are white hot right now.
I like that. Thank you. They are white hot, Mike. You'll remember if you kind of rewind the clock back just to the 2019 calendar year, I had two wins all year. It was Brant Snedeker's win and Xander Schauffele in Hawaii. I have already secured two W's on this early PGA Tour season in 2020. Two out of three, Mike. I had Adam Scott a couple weeks ago at 40-1 at the Riviera, aka the Genesis Invitational. And this weekend, it was Sung J.M. at 29-1 odds, Mike, the 21-year-old Korean who is quite literally playing in every single PGA Tour event he can. Reason being, he wants to get an Olympic medal and participate in the Olympics so he can be exempt from his mandatory military service as being a South Korean resident. This has become a storyline with previous South Korean golfers, and this is a really crazy one. Now that M is a PGA Tour winner at 21, he got it done in really impressive fashion on Sunday.
Yeah, and he, other than battling with the winds and everything else all weekend, he held off Tommy Fleetwood, who had his chance at his first win on tour. Golf Jesus did not get it. He did not get saved.
Yeah, he didn't move walk on water when he needed to.
No, there you go. That one works too.
He hit the second shot on the par 5 18th in the water, Mike. Yep. You just have to miss left. He needed a birdie to tie and send it to a playoff. You just got to miss left there and give yourself a chance to get up and down. He hit a high fade when he needed to draw. Ball in the water. Tournament over. And yeah, Sung J.M. gets me another win, Mike. Two wins, 3 weeks. Impressive performance for M, who, like I mentioned, you know, he's got a crazy timeline, Mike, because he's now facing that part in his life where he's subject to be called in military service as being a resident of South Korea. So one rare exemption is, I believe, if you were an Olympic medal winner or something to that effect regarding participating in the Olympics, he could potentially be exempt from that. And he's using that kind of as fuel to basically play as much golf as he can and be as successful as possible. And it's proven successful. He's the Ironman on the PGA Tour, and he finally got win number one.
Yeah, I mean, if you got something that's going to keep you driving toward that, toward a goal, go ahead and do it. That certainly is what's going to help him out with it.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about Tommy Fleetwood, mostly because also I want to talk about Paul Azinger's comments about Tommy Fleetwood.
And our friends at the Euro Tour as well.
And the Euro Tour. We're big fans of the Euro Tour and how they do things. Azinger went off on kind of a rambling 30-second TED talk where he basically said that the Euro Tour sucks, right?
Yeah, in so many words. He was basically talking about Tommy Fleetwood's resume in golf,
yes.
and it consists of all European Tour wins. Tommy Fleetwood has never won on the continental United States on U.S. soil on the PGA Tour. And while a lot of people might consider that kind of a scar in his resume, you and I both know that that guy's been on a ton of major championship leaderboards, and he's looking to break through big time. And just because he hasn't gotten that win on the PGA Tour does not make him not a world-class player, because he absolutely is one.
No, and I mean, if we can look at the argument, which, and I didn't, you know, saw this on Twitter, so let's take this with a grain of salt, and you probably saw this too, the list of strength of field in tournaments, and Fleetwood's best win on the Euro Tour was at a French Open, or France Open, I think is what it is, because French Open's a golf, the tennis one, and strength of field was like 280 or something, and the Honda Classic this year had a strength of field of like 271.
Not a game-changing difference there, by any means.
No, it's not.
and you and I know, when we cover kind of casually these European Tour events, there's a lot of weeks of the year where 3-4 of the top 10 guys in the world will make the flight over there and play in, you know, their home country opens, like, you know, Rory's done in the past with the Irish Open and played in the French Open himself. So these guys aren't afraid to go over there, and the fields really aren't that different in quality if you look at the tops of them specifically.
Yeah, and you're still getting quality guys going on both tours. Obviously, the guys come to the U.S. because this is where the money is. The PGA Tour has the money. I did feel, however, that Paul Azinger's comments really had a hidden meaning in it, which was that the Premier Golf League does not need to exist because the PGA Tour is so pristine and is already the premier golf league in the world.
He's a patriot, Paul Azinger, isn't he? He's sticking up for his home tour. You know, I feel like there's a little Ryder Cup tension back in there, too, from his earlier playing captaining days with U.S. versus Europe. But it's funny you bring up the PGL because we'd hinted at them the last few weeks, and basically what's happening is there is some sort of rogue, not so underground anymore. The commissioner's come out and done a couple of interviews on podcasts as well too, which you can check out after you're done listening to this episode. But the bottom line is that there is some sort of rogue organizations that are looking to put together a brand new tour, Mike. They put out a lot of very cryptic tweets over the last couple of weeks about challenging everything that we know as the normalcy in the game of golf, basically.
They pretty much are taking the Formula One model of individual and teams.
Teams of
and
four,
putting
it
into
like.
Golf. Teams of four
teams,
and putting it into
48
golf.
Players.
And of course, Phil Mickelson is already on record as saying this sounds interesting. He wants to hear more. He's not endorsing it, but he was saying he wants to hear about it. It's something he's curious about. And of course, Rory came out recently now and just slammed the door shut on the PGL.
Rory was very anti-PGL right out of the gate. I don't know if maybe he can be lured by an absolutely astronomical check. I think a lot of these guys can.
What the PGL, if the PGL can pay better than the PGA Tour, then guys will go there.
Yeah, Brooks Koepka said, quote, he just wants to play against the best. However, I also know Brooks Koepka, and he's down to take a big check, just like Justin Johnson is. Those are guys I could see playing in the PGL. But the four-person team is intriguing, Mike. It's kind of like you think about what the NBA did with their All-Star game. You know, it's a showcase of all the best players, and now LeBron and Giannis were the captains picking their own teams this year.
Right.
You wonder if you're going to see something similar where you get to see these dream 4v4 team matchups that you would never see in any other format in the game. It is unique, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of things that would be really interesting to see. Like maybe if the PGL doesn't pan out, could be incorporated into the PGA Tour, something that we could see for future events, or maybe a couple weeks of, or a month, maybe. Maybe that's something in that off season that you do when no one's really paying attention to kind of bring some interest back to the game. I think that could be really cool. I don't know if I want to see a whole season of it, but...
Yeah, it's kind of that idea that Thanksgiving weekend with the Tiger Phil match was definitely electric.
That was amazing.
That was a big event. You know, if you put things around that time of the year and you spice it up and put it on the West Coast and put it in prime time and don't put it on a football night, you could have a chance for some viewership there.
Yeah, could be interesting. Yeah. We'll see. We'll certainly follow along and see what happens. This coming week, the guys are at Bay Hill. And Tiger's not playing. A lot of big names not playing.
Yeah, I know. This is kind of a sad one too, Mike, because I feel like it sucks to say, but you know, it's been a few years without the King, Arnold Palmer, since he passed.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
This was his spot, Bay Hill. He goes way back with this course. And it's sad to say, but the field has been dropping off as of recently. I saw some tweets from our friend Jeremy Schilling as well, talking about the schedule for next year. It looks like the Florida swing is even more cramped than it was before, if you can imagine the way it is now.
Yeah,
but so there's some interesting changes for these types of stops in the Florida swing. Bay Hill not getting a great field. I'm not quite pressing the panic button for Tiger being at the match play in Austin yet. I'm a little concerned about these injuries keeping him out now at Bay Hill, but I think it's a preservation and a pre-Masters thought process on his end. So Tiger sitting this one out this week.
Yeah, it's just you got to do what you got to do for your body to play. But I think it is really concerning to me with the way the PGA Tour has continued to adjust the schedule, where there's no room for these, you know, there's less and less of these filler events in there. So these marquee events like Bay Hill just aren't getting the attention anymore because there are other events that the guys would rather play at, because Arnie's not going to be there on 18 anymore welcoming them as they walk off.
Yeah, and you looked at the calendar and they show you literally every month from now to September is either a Players' Championship coming up next week, major, or the Olympics, or the FedEx Cup. In every single month till football starts, basically. So they've really spaced it out nicely. So let's see if it can pay off for when the biggest tournaments come around here in the next few months. So let's get into it, Mike, because we're recording live. We don't need to bore you with anything that we're watching right now, but all you need to know is that Super Tuesday came, it went, it happened. It was epic. We're watching all the coverage. Obviously, Donald Trump, Commander in Chief, is something we love to follow up on every week. All you need to know, Mike, about Chapter 9 of the book I read, Rick Riley's funny book about Donald Trump on the golf course, is Donald Trump has a ton of feuds. He has feuds with women. He has feuds with adversaries in business. He has feuds with golf course architects. He has feuds with media members. But the question now, Mike, to segue to pop politics, is who do we think, now that we're on the outset of Super Tuesday, who do we think Trump is going to be feuding with basically every single day until the election in November?
Well, it's going to be interesting because now that all the moderates have dropped out of the race,
they have.
I don't know if that means Bernie is the shoo-in anymore. So I don't know. We're going to have a much better idea of whether this race is over tonight or it's not.
Well, Mike, I will say I want to rehash something that we haven't talked about in a couple months, which is your favorite term, trimming of the field. We finally did it.
It happened about 2 months too late, but here it is.
It happened fast and furious on Monday. Just some quick eulogies on your end from the weekend and Monday. I'll start first with Tom Steyer. He had an electric video of him dancing on stage with rapper Juvenile performing his, you know, worldwide hit, which you're very familiar with, Back That Ass Up, from 1999 or 2000, I believe.
Tom Steyer.
That was quite an image. And then immediately the next night, as soon as I got excited about that video, you quickly informed me that he dropped out. So the billionaire
run
is over.
Saturday night. He dropped out the night of South Carolina.
The night after that video.
Done.
The coincidence,
gone.
I think not. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. He's gone. And Mayor Pete, who, of course, had a very strong showing in Iowa, won Iowa, if you can say that. I think Mayor Pete was helped by Iowa and hurt by Iowa all at the same time, because if they could have actually said he was the winner on caucus night, I think it would have given him a lot more momentum. But it just everything that happened around Iowa helped out Bernie more than anybody else.
And he did everything pretty solid from top to bottom. I think this might have just been a slightly too soon scenario for Mayor Pete.
Yes.
We're going to be bringing him up 3 or 4 years from now. He'll circle the wagons again, for sure.
I mean, I'd like to see him run for statewide office. I'd like to see him win a statewide office in Indiana. I think that was my biggest knock against him, is you got a guy from a small town in Indiana who's never won statewide office and he wants to be the president.
Yeah. Do you go back and kind of just gargle that up right now? Just kind of just grab that right now while you can? You got a few years to spare?
Yeah, just go run for statewide office. We could use you, you know, somewhere there.
And then Amy Klobuchar out as well too.
Yeah.
Endorsement for Joe Biden right after. Like she barely even got to sleep on it before endorsing Joe Biden for Super Tuesday. That paid off well for Biden, who did a good job overall on his end for that campaign. And that and the Mayor Pete endorsement too, and him and Beto as well. He got a lot of quick allies. And Amy kind of had that great moment in New Hampshire and then fizzled out and just couldn't garner that momentum when she needed to.
Yeah, you know, I really liked Amy Klobuchar. Disappointed to see her exit the ticket. But ultimately, after South Carolina, it was clear that it had to be Biden as the one to drive the moderates. So we're going to see what happens here on Super Tuesday and see whether Biden and the establishment of Democrats is able to pull out a win, or whether Sanders is able to avoid the slosh. I want to stay clean. I don't want to say the word we wrote in our notes.
Well done. And I appreciate that. We're wondering if he's going to get effed again. The sports analogies I thought of, one golf, one non-golf, Mike. The golf one is, it feels like just Phil Mickelson at the U.S. Open. You know, Bernie just keeps knocking on the door. Yes. He's right there. Yes. You know, he does everything the right way. He puts himself in a position to win, and just one bounce or another, one bad shot, one poorly timed moment just unfolds. And then my non-golf one is the Buffalo Bills of the 90s, Mike.
Oh,
just gets right there, wide right
that
field
one hurts
goal,
more, boost I feel
the
like.
Cowboys, just second place a lot for Bernie. I feel that might be happening to him again, but we'll be following the campaign trail as it unfolds.
Always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, let's get into this week's featured guest, Alex.
Yes.
You, during your onslaught of interviews during your weekend at the Waste Management Phoenix Open Area, you got to chat with Mark Williamson.
I did, yeah. So he's from the Scottsdale area, and we talked via Skype, and he's a really cool guy. Mike, have you ever tried any form of like yoga before at all?
I think I did some yoga back in the day when I had a Wii Fit.
Oh, nice.
And good did some of those workouts on there where it had you do different yoga positions with the scale. And
good memories.
That would be the extent of my yoga.
I remember learning basic things. I think like high school gym class or something like that. There may have only been like a class or two on that. But Mark has a really interesting background. Not only a pro golfer, but now works on the yoga side and the golf fitness side of the game. So there was a lot of that. We have a lot of people in common too in terms of mutual contacts in the phone book, Mike. So a lot of catching up to do. Indeed.
There you go. Well, we'll get to that chat in just a moment. But first, you've probably heard the hype, but have you ever considered incorporating CBD into your golf routine? If so, we're confident that our sponsor over at Joint Caddy will make you a CBD believer. Their topical freeze gel is perfect for anyone who experiences aches and pains on the course. It's equipped with a unique roll-on applicator that eliminates any chance of greasy hands affecting your grip and fits perfectly in your bag. Or maybe you fall victim to the back nine jitters. Joint Caddy also carries their own blend of oral drops that can help you relax, focus, and ease anxiety on those downhill four-footers. They're also great for sleep, so you can dream about that perfect round. All of Joint Caddy's products are cultivated from only the highest quality industrial hemp and free of any solvents, fillers, artificial flavors, sweeteners, or preservatives. They even have the third-party test results listed right on their website. So head over to jointcaddy.com and see what all the hype's about. And while you're there, use promo code COURSEOFLIFE to take 20% off any order. Again, that's 20% off your order with promo code COURSEOFLIFE at jointcaddy.com.
All right, next up on the tee, he's from the Scottsdale, Arizona Valley area, an area where I just was for the Waste Management. We have a lot of people in common too, so we'll get into that. It's Mark Williamson, big into golf fitness, and he's also known as the Golf Yogi. It's at the Golf Yogi on Instagram. Hey, Mark, thanks for joining us on The Course of Life.
My pleasure, Alex. Thanks so much for having me, bud.
Definitely. So tell us a little bit about, I guess, first, your background in the game of golf. I read a little bit of your bio, and much like a lot of the pros that we've had on here, and we'll get into who we know in common, but you have a big background in the mini tours. You lived that life. You did it. You lived a full life as a professional golfer, and then kind of transitioned out of playing professionally into the Golf Yogi brand and everything that you have going on now. But let's just rewind the clock a little bit and tell me a little bit about what your kind of playing career was like and kind of what you... The values you were able to get out of being, you know, on tour weekly and living that life day in and day out.
Yeah. I started playing golf really young. I started playing with my dad when I was about three. I started playing tournaments when I was, 9, 10 years old. And I actually quit playing in high school for a while. I chased a great dream of mine to try to play college basketball.
Wow. So you get offers from some legit schools to do basketball instead of golf?
Yeah, I had some very small school offers, but a roundabout way, I got hooked up with Rob Evans, who was the coach at Ole Miss, who I actually went down there to on a recruiting trip for golf and got to meet Rob, and we started talking hoops, and it ended up I quit playing golf for about 2 years, about my junior year of high school, and just kept in contact with him and said, "Hey, look, I'm not playing golf, but I'm not coming to Ole Miss, but thanks for chatting with me and yada yada." And he said, "Well, I'm actually going to Arizona State." And I said, "Well, that's funny. I'm going to go, thinking about playing small school basketball." And he let me come out and walk on. And I realized very quickly into it that I was way out of my element. This game of golf, I'm a, 5'10", short, slow guy. And I was always a shooter, but
me too. That's pretty much my specs as well. Yeah.
that's all I had, man. That wasn't a great passer, wasn't a great ball handler, but I could shoot a bit. But so I quit playing actually in preseason when I got out there, and Rob was just one of the greatest guys I've ever met. But went back to playing golf, transferred back to Arkansas for a couple of years where I met my wife, and that was always home to me before Scottsdale, and just got back to playing and knew that that's what I wanted to do. So I turned pro when I was 21, and I knocked it around every mini tour in the country from, Hooters, Tight Lies, Gateway, Pepsi, US Pro, Canadian.
All the classic names. Yeah.
All the classics. Yeah. If you were out there in, early 2000s, that's, there were a number of them, but it was great. I loved the playing life. I was always a range rat. I loved to practice. Got to meet some great guys. I chased it around for about 10 years. I quit playing when I was about 30, which is about a little over a year after my daughter was born. And that was the, kind of tough one being on the road when you've got a newborn at home. So that made it pretty easy to say, hey, it's time to find something else to do. And, I had fallen in love with yoga and the fitness side. I think all of us that were playing professionally in the early 2000s saw what Tiger did. And it was like, oh, we're athletes now. And, so you see what he did with his body, and all of a sudden everybody's into lifting and into running. Back then, 2001, 2003, I mean, if there was golf fitness, we weren't exactly calling it golf fitness. It was, we were just trying to get stronger and trying to hit it further and kind of like right. Now, but
I feel like it started like with golfers back in the day. If you're talking like the 90s, it's like, all right, let's just get on the treadmill. And then once Tiger came along, it was, okay, we need to be lifting and we need strength and we need body core strength and whatnot. And then obviously with the amount of fitness that's been kind of out in sports society in general in the last couple of decades, you've seen yoga be big on the rise. So tell me about how you got into kind of golf and yoga as they kind of meld together and where that kind of hit you. The value of having yoga in the life of a golfer, whether you're trying to be a pro or whether you're just a casual golfer that plays, once a month.
Yeah. For me, it was, my wife was into yoga at the time. And one of my best friends, a guy named Benoit Beiser, who played mini tours with for a long time. He played Webdot. He was into it as well. And so they kind of dragged me to my first class and I fell in love with it. I saw the benefits immediately from, not just the own body weight strength that you got instead of, trying to just push, pull, bench and curls and whatever else, but, the breathing and how to calm the mind and how to calm the breath and how to slow the heart rate when things are getting really difficult through breathing. And so the parallels were just immediate for me. And, it really, kind of took hold for me when I was traveling. It was great to be at home and be at my home studio, whatever, but it was really good. When you're on the road, if you're trying to work out, it's all right, what gym will give us a week's pass for, $20 and where's going to let us work out? Or does the club have a gym? It was always up in the air when you got into town, where can I work out this week? And when I got into yoga, I just started throwing my yoga mat in my travel bag, with my golf clubs. And that was the great thing. You didn't need much space. You could do everything you needed in the hotel room. You could, get your pre-round, stretch or yoga practice going. You could do stuff in the evenings when you're, get home, a little beat up, whatever it is. And so that's where it really started to take hold for me. And I mean, I went from a gym rat to just living at the yoga studio in no time. You know, I dropped my gym membership about a month after I got into yoga, and that's all I did for quite a while. So, you know, a lot of aspects to it. The physical is pretty easy to see, you know, getting the muscles longer, stronger. You know, for golf and having that own body weight aspect to it, I think that's great. You know, for the more advanced side of it, if you're playing with arm balances and wraps and things like that, the focus that really demands, was big for golf. And, you know, as I talk a lot about with all of my clients in the gym, it's, you know, we're trying to work the mind as much as we're trying to work the body. If we can be, you know, have that focus and teach the mind to focus a little bit better, teach the breath to be able to slow down instead of speed up when things get difficult and try to control that heart rate. That's, you know, it's massive for golfers because we're out there for so long. You know, it's not a 5-second play like in football or even a 30-second point in tennis. You know, it's trying to keep your mind focused for up to, you know, 5 hours in tournament golf and knowing when to let the mind go, knowing when to bring it back. You know, that's a huge aspect of what you get out of yoga and the breathing side and the mental side as well.
Definitely. Yeah. So you mentioned, I mean, yeah, you're out there for 4 or 5 hours on the golf course. And then also there's that aspect of, you know, you're out there for so long, but you just need to really have it together mentally and physically for just a few seconds at a time when you're making those swings to make the best swings. And those kind of things are important in terms of your breathing and how your muscles are acting during the course of a 5-hour day. It's just being ready for those exact moments. Before we talk about kind of during the round and what yoga helps you with on course specifically, let's talk about just before the round for amateur golfers or people that just have, you know, 5 to 10 minutes to, you know, stretch and do kind of basic poses or things that they can do, whether it's the moment before they get in the car to go to the course or when they arrive to the course or at the driving range, just kind of stretching things out. What are some important things that people need to know, you know, before they're playing as it pertains to stretching their muscles and yoga specifically that could help them out?
You know, one of the biggest things for me before people play is movement. You know, we've seen that static stretching isn't, you know, all that beneficial unless there's not much stress to it, i.e., you know, yin yoga and kind of passive stretching. But when we're getting ready to go out and make a dynamic movement like the golf swing, we've got to be doing things that are, you know, moving, that are going to make that movement easier. So, you know, I like to have people getting into their hips, getting into their spines, even simple things like cat-cows. And I've got a stretch that I do that it isn't exactly yoga-ish, but, you know, it's kind of imagine like you're you know, swinging a hula hoop around your hips without the hula hoop. And that's something that I do. I have a lot of my clients do before they play, and it's kind of silly looking. You know, you might want to do it at the house alone and not on the range.
Now is that not too far, as ridiculous as it sounds? If you remember Miguel Angel Jimenez, kind of went very viral and popular for being an older guy that still stretches in kind of a very weird looking way on the driving range. But is that not too far away from what he's doing there to stretch his muscles?
Yeah. You know, I know the one you're talking about that everybody loves. He puts his knees and his feet together and gets going. And I mean, that's what works for him. What I do is pretty similar to that. I do it with my feet a little bit wider, almost like I'm in a golf stance. And that's something that helps me out getting into my hips. And that's just my, you know, the way my body's built. And that's what I try to get across to everybody, whether I'm, you know, down at the Tour Striker Academy or even with my one-on-one clients, is I'm big on people having 5-10 minutes worth of stretches that they know for their body. You know, I have people all the time email me and say, what stretches should I do before I play? And it's like, well, what bothers you when you play? Is it your shoulders? Is it your neck? Is it your low back? Is it your hips? Is it, you know, so to just say, here's 5 stretches, go do them. I mean, that's, you know, kind of, that's just throwing darts at a wall. But once we get to know where our tight spots are, you know, you play and your low back's a little sore, let's focus on the hips and the hamstrings before you play and make sure we're getting loosened up and get some good movement there. You know, you have a tight neck, tight shoulders, maybe a little rounding, C-spine, whatever it is. Let's work on opening those shoulders before we get out there, because that makes it that much easier to recognize, you know, while we're on the course. And you know, for me, in my career, and even now when I'm, you know, playing for fun with the boys, I tend to get a little rounded late in rounds. I don't know if it's getting tired. I don't know if it's just, you know, not spending 60 hours a week doing this anymore like I used
totally
to.
All. Yeah.
You know, but that's something to pay attention to. So I know late in rounds, if I'm feeling it in the shoulders a little bit, do a couple of stretches while you're on the course. Just open the shoulders and just having that awareness of where we need it in our body. So at really to answer that, it's where everybody needs it. You know, if you play around, you know, whether it's on one of my videos or some of the videos that I have out there and you see, you know, I did these shoulder stretches, but they didn't do a whole lot, but man, I really needed the hip stuff. Well, that's where I want to see you focus. So I'm much bigger on people having, you know, 10 minutes that they can do exactly for their body, you know, first thing in the morning. Especially on days that you're playing, wake up, get the stretches done at the house. Again, 5-10 minutes doesn't need to be a lot. Get some movement going. I'll do simple things like, you know, standing up straight and butt kicks just to get into the quads a little bit and stretch out the front of the leg. So easy little things like that. And then once you get to the course, I love rotational stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask is when you're out there and, you know, you have, say you're standing on a tee box waiting for the group in front of you for a minute or two, or, you know, you've got 60 seconds before you hit your shot, just whether it's, you know, rotating the body or breathing exercises in general. What are those kind of quick things that people can take mid-round with them as well?
Yep, my favorite one mid-round is always a moving squat. You know, as golfers, we squat a lot, whether it's reading putts, whether it's marking your ball, whether it's putting it in the round, whatever. We put a lot of strain into the hips and the hamstrings and the low back, just from a lot of things we do in golf. So what I would call a moving squat is if you take your feet, maybe like you're going to hit a 7 or an 8 iron, splay the toes out just a little bit. And then I kind of do a twist into it all the way down, like we're, you know, doing the old twist, the dance from back in the day, and just work it until you get the butt low and just keep moving around. And when we're trying to get that good movement, I'm not real, you know, tied up on, oh, keep the feet here, do this, just move wherever it feels good. You know, I let people, you know, lift their toes a little bit or their heels and rocking back and forth and try to square the chest to the ground and try to sit up tall and sit down like you're in a chair and just move all the way through it. And, you know, moving squat's an easy one to do on the course. You can grab onto the side of a golf cart if you need a little stability for it. You know, other than that, it just simple stuff with the shoulders. I like to tell people if you're stretching with a golf club, don't ever grab the head and the grip that's, you know, really closing off one shoulder and opening the other. So grab the shaft and slide your hand all the way down to the head. So your hands are pretty symmetrical each side. And then you can take little stretches right and left, get into the shoulders. You know, I'm still big on the old school stretch that I'm sure we've all seen, you know, hooking the club behind our arms with the club behind our back and making just simple rotations. You know, it seems simple and as some people want real, you know, give me the sexy version, give me the crazy version, give me the, you know, the simple stuff works just as well. And that's something that if my back's getting tight, just simple little rotations on the course like that really make a big difference.
Very cool. So again, it's Mark Williamson. It's at The Golf Yogi on Instagram, and you can see a lot more of that yoga golf specific content. One thing that I do want to mention, and there's a few different people that we kind of know and have in common. You're based in the Scottsdale area. I just went out there and had a great trip out there. I want to get some quick answers from you on some people that we have mutually that have been guests on this podcast as well too. You mentioned Aaron Olson, who was a guest on previous week's episode, and had a great time with him, got some great tips with him. He actually saw me hit one of the greatest flop shots my life on camera.
Dude, I saw your video. Are you kidding me? That was it. I thought it was going in. You know, I
appreciate that.
More enthusiasm out of AO on that one, but I thought you made it.
I think I'm going to share that every week for the rest of my life. It was that great. But tell me a little bit about your relationship with him and his teaching as well.
Yeah, I've known Aaron a really long time. He was an assistant up at Desert Mountain, where I had privileges to practice and play for a while in my career. So this is going back, geez Louise, this is probably going back. We'd have to ask him the actual date, but I'm going to guess I've probably known Aaron 16, 17, 18 years. He's got such a great love for the game and of learning. You know, I started working with Mike Bennett and Andy Plummer a little bit later in my career on Stack and Tilt. And Aaron, you know, was working quite a bit on that as well at the time. You know, just kind of, it was really cool to be able to kind of bounce some things and chat a little bit about that. But, you know, seeing what Aaron's done, I know he's one of the top young instructors in the country. It doesn't surprise me at all. That guy's got a great mind for the game. He's got a great eye for the swing. But yeah, it was a lot of fun when I started working for Martin Chuck down at the Tour Striker Academy, and there's Aaron, and I probably hadn't seen him in geez, 5-6 years, and it was like, oh my God, you know, and just fell right back into the old routine. But he's definitely a perk of being down at the academy, is getting to spend a lot of time with AO. He's he's a great, great guy.
Yeah, he was a great guy, and we enjoyed having him on. We'll be sure to have him again. A couple players that I wanted you to touch on that we had in common who'd been on the show before. One of them is a guy who's down here in my neck of the woods near Austin, Texas, Ben Kern, a guy who made the weekend at the PGA Championship in Bellerive a few years ago. He was a great guest, a great club pro in his own right that still plays a ton. Tell me a little bit about your time out with him back in the day in the mini tours and your memories of playing with Ben.
Yeah, there was, we had a great group of friends that ran around together, and Ben was definitely that, definitely one of those guys in there. It was back then, it was probably Ben Kern, Benoit Beiser, myself, buddy of ours named Aaron Weston, Nate Lashley, Trevor Murphy. There were a lot of us that were spending a lot of time together. Another guy named Scott Anderson that we played a lot of practice rounds and traveled with. But we kind of, you know, Kern, I knew him for so long. And my God, I don't know that I've ever met anybody that hits the ball better than he does.
It's insane. And it's so effortless too, Mark. That's the annoying part about it.
And the sound that comes off of it, it's the only thing I can relate it to is I was at TPC practicing one day, and VJ was on the back of the range there at Stadium. And that's about the same sound. When you hear it come off of VJ's club, when you heard it come off of Kern's, it's just like a 30-odd stick going off, man. I mean, it's just so good.
Yeah, he strikes the ball, and I just have a glancing blow, basically, compared to what he does.
I think Kern, we all have pretty glancing blows.
Definitely. And you mentioned also Nate Lashley in that group, too. That was, yeah. I told you before we hopped on, the lucky timing I had with meeting and touching base with him right before he won at the Rocket Mortgage, the week of his life. And he had the kindness to hop on with me the week after. And that was a great conversation. I saw him out there at the Waste Management. Tell me a little bit about like what that moment was like for you as a guy who'd been around him in the mini tours and lived in the Scottsdale area to see him win and have that breakout moment and really, you know, change the course of his career.
It was, you know, it was just awesome. I mean, we've got, you know, these are guys that, I mean, it was so much fun living here and you know, going through and practicing and everything the golf side, but we were all hanging out all the time when we were off the course, you know. One of the great stories, I didn't mention this one too before we jumped on, but when my daughter was born Christmas Eve in 08, and right after that was the Super Bowl, you know, a couple months later. And Nate had a Super Bowl party at his old place, and we lived less than a mile apart. And we went down, and my wife and I went down and hanging out with a bunch of friends there. And our daughter was, you know, 2 months old and just dead asleep. And this, you know, it wasn't a real rowdy crowd, but he had this little glass top table, kind of end table. And we just kind of set her right there, right next to, you know, right next to where we were sitting. And it was like, that was my daughter's first Super Bowl was sleeping under the table at Lashley's house at 2 months old. But seeing him go out and win, you know, there were a lot of us that knocked it around mini tours that, you know, we all probably have similar stories. You know, I came close and didn't quite make it, or, you know, I had a couple of good years, but didn't quite get out there to the PGA Tour and didn't quite get to where we were, you know, where we were trying to get to. So to see Nate, you know, go out and have the success he's had and you know, just kept grinding it out and, you know, playing WebDot or Korn Ferry now, you know, and just keep getting better. And then to see him get his tour card was awesome. And then to see him win out there as well was just, you know, it's like that's just really cool to see, you know, see buddies from back in the day that just kept it going and kept their nose down and kept just working so hard. But that's one that, you know, seeing him win and get out there and really getting it done. And I mean, he started off this year great as well. It looks like he's playing really well. So it's
he's had a couple of top three finishes already.
Just great to see him find a home out there. And you know, another guy that just hits it so well and has a great mind for the game. And great attitude towards the game. And so, yeah, that was a big one. There were a bunch of us that, you know, kind of the crew from back in the day Lashley, you know, won the Rocket Mortgage. We were kind of texting back and forth like, oh my God, can you believe this? You know, wow, it's just great. It's just really cool to see that, you know, some of these guys that, you know, like all of us that were knocking around mini tours forever that didn't have that right out of college and, you know, kind of Matthew Wolf career that, oh, I'm here and then I'm a PGA Tour winner. And,
Right.
Or to see the guys that really grind it out and to have friends that are doing it and getting it done. That was awesome to see. So
true testament to the grind, and he's definitely one of yours as well too. So yeah, it was great to see. Let's get into a few just kind of rapid fire questions and some other aspects of your life as well too. I want to talk about the backyard putting green, because I have a very crappy backyard golf course and you have a fantastic one. Brag at home for everyone who's listening of what that life is like, maybe the greatest shot you hit in the backyard or something like that.
Oh, I must say, if you ask my wife this question, if she was here, I'd pull her in here. But I'm going to tell you, it's once a week that I'm outside that I look at her and I say, this is the best money I've ever spent in my life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I literally, unless it's raining, I'm out, just messing around on the putting green, chipping and putting probably 5-6 nights a week. Out there cooking, grilling something, whatever, I might mess around. Last night it was perfect weather. I was out there till dark, messing around. But best shot I've hit, we've got a patio off of our bedroom upstairs.
Oh, there we go.
I hit a flop shot off the patio and made it in the back right hole. And I'd love to say I did it first take, but it was probably about the 15th try there. But
you're coming for the trick shot artist there. You're coming for him, I guess.
That's it. And it's a blast. I got a chipping mat that I can kind of move around. So it depends on the day, but we'll end up, hitting some flop shots over the pool, or we'll, throw it under the patio and you have to skip it off the patio and off the wall. There are a lot of golf balls in the neighbor's yards. That's for sure.
Tell me a little bit about triathlon life. I don't think I've ever had a person who's ever completed a triathlon on the podcast, let alone the Ironman, like the one. Tell us a little bit about your experience just in triathlons in general, and maybe the toughest portion on your end between run, bike, and swim.
Yeah, when I quit playing, I just wanted to try to do a bunch of the things that I never have, and I was always curious about triathlon. And I wasn't really I had mountain biked, but I wasn't really that great of a runner. I'd never been on a tri bike, and I had never done an open water swim, so I have no idea why I wanted to do it. But
you had one out of three, but you need the other two.
Yeah, just give it a shot. So I started messing around with some shorter races, some sprint triathlons around here, which are about an hour and 15 minutes, and then I just kind of progressed up. I did a couple of Olympic distances, which are for me about a 2.5 hour race, and then played around with a couple of half Ironmans and really enjoyed it. And I signed up and did my first full Ironman in 2014, in Boulder in Colorado. And, I've always enjoyed having that carrot dangling in front of me. I like something to chase after and a goal to work towards. And so that was kind of fun. When I got into triathlon and I started talking to a lot of friends that were in it, I talked to a coach, I hired a coach, great guy named Frank Soule that is here in Scottsdale, and he and I became good friends. And when I kind of figured out what it was going to take to do an Ironman, it was, we wrote a 9-month training program, that was kind of bounced between about 14 and 18 hours a week. So it was like having another part-time job, but it was great just to kind of see what the body's capable of. For me, the hardest aspect, swim, bike, and run, it's funny for me. I don't really enjoy swimming, but I'm decent at it. I don't really enjoy running, but I'm decent at it. I love being on the bike and it just absolutely love it. But, I think the hardest part of triathlon truly is trying to get yourself amped up every day for a workout. That's the hardest part.
The train in general.
The race day is a party. It's kind of a celebration of all the work you put in. But the training every day, that's where it gets pretty tough, where it's, I've got the best line my wife had through the whole thing, and she's a very good triathlete as well. And we've kind of moved on from triathlon. We're doing a lot of mountain biking now and some off-road triathlons. But
yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
My wife had a line when I was probably a month and a half out from the race. So we were starting to, you kind of peak in your training, and then you come down a little slowly from your peak. And my wife asked me one night, we were going to bed, she said, "What's your run tomorrow?" And I said, "I've got a 14 miler. And she goes, "Well, at least it's not a long one tomorrow."
Yeah,
and,
seriously.
And we were dead serious. And it was like, yeah, I know. And then we kind of stopped and looked at each other and we're like, we're sick in the head. A 14 mile run isn't that, but compared to the,
at least you could recognize you were sick in the head there. That's good.
Yeah, like, it's not that bad, but it, Yeah, that was probably the hardest thing for me. But triathlon's great. I love it. I love endurance sports. It's just a good time. Kind of same thing. You know, you got to challenge the mind a little bit. You know, one of the great lines I've heard, the body's, you know, the mind's going to quit 1,000 times before the body gives out. So it's one of those that you convince your mind and the body's going to follow suit.
Love it. Awesome. And the last part I wanted to get to, which is listed clearly on your Instagram bio, and it being from Austin, Texas, one of the barbecue homes of the country, it says that you're a BBQ addict. And now that can go a lot of different directions. But first, I'd love to just hear about what you love about BBQ. What are your favorite things to do? You know, are you a griller or a smoker? What are your best dishes that you do barbecue wise?
You know, we moved out. So my wife and I are from Arkansas originally. I grew up in Arkansas and we moved out here in 2003, right after she graduated college and I was playing gateway tour out here. So it just made a lot of sense to move out. But, coming from Arkansas now, I'm not going to even compare between Austin. You guys do barbecue on a different level down there.
Appreciate that. Yeah.
You know, we always like kind of Memphis style barbecue being from Arkansas. And we moved out.
Is that
out
more
here.
Sauce filled, the Memphis style? Or what's the kind of main distinction to Memphis style barbecue, in your opinion?
For me, it's the rub. You know, and we kind of, we've toyed with our rub for a long time. But for me, it's a good dry rub. That's what kind of gets the flavor that I'm looking for, you know, out of, especially kind of Memphis style. And that took a while to figure out, but you know, my wife, we kept trying all these different barbecue places, excuse me, out here and, nothing was really doing it for us. And so my wife, one year for Christmas, she said, "Hey, I got you a Christmas present. We've got to drive to Glendale to get it." And I'm like, "What in the hell is in Glendale? Like, are you kidding me?" And back then there was nothing. The Cardinal Stadium wasn't there. The, you know, Glendale was just a 45 minute ride. Like I was like, okay. And there was a Cabela's over there and we pulled up and she said, "Well," I pulled around back. I said, "What are you doing?" And she got me a smoker. And so she said, I'm tired of hearing you complain, figure it out. And I went, all right. So it was probably a year and a half before I'd make anything for anybody other than just my wife and myself. I was, you know,
you had a little test kitchen going on there. Test smoker.
I just try it out for a while. But, you know, after figuring it out, it's something that my wife and I do together a lot. Probably my favorite thing to do is ribs on the smoker. We've got a really good recipe that we've used for a long time and with the rub, and we use the Texas crutch, which I'm sure you're familiar with, a little brown sugar, a little bit of honey, a little bit of butter, a little bit of tiger sauce, and wrap them up in that for about the last hour and a half there on the smoker. But that's one of our favorites. We do every now and then, I do grill a lot, but I've started playing around with more cold smoking steaks. And so throwing them on for an hour on cold and getting that flavor in, and then, you know, searing them on the cast iron skillet on the grill.
That's an interesting combo there. I like that.
It's a little different. It definitely gives them a great flavor, but it, you know, I just love playing around with stuff. The big ones we do are ribs. I do smoked wings. We'll do whole chickens for pulled chicken sandwiches, things like that. But yeah, it's turned into, you know, probably my, you know, one of my favorite hobbies, just playing around, especially during football season. You know, I tell everybody during football season, I cook every Saturday, come over and just hang out. I'll let you know what time food will be done and just enjoy. So,
And it makes you a better friend for everyone in your life too, if you have a smoker. You know, you're just like you're an instant endorsement for every football Saturday in the fall, for sure.
That's it. Come on over. It's, we always have it going. That's for sure.
Definitely. Honestly. So again, it's at The Golf Yogi on Instagram. It's Mark Williamson. Mark, before we sign off, tell everyone just outside of the Instagram page a little bit more about where they can find more of your content and learn more about you.
Yeah, my website's thegolfyogi.com. Done a lot of videos. I think we're up to about 50, 60 videos for Golfers RX on their page there. You know, and those are about 3 to 4 minute kind of tip videos that I've put a lot out there. And nice. But yeah, that's kind of I've got a purchasable downloaded video on my website. It's about 55 minutes. You know, it takes you through a little bit of a warm up through a little bit of a yoga flow. I always like to have what I call a brainless flow, just something that people can kind of get lost in and just let the body move naturally. So it's got that in there, and then some, you know, cool down stretches, some stuff on the floor. So got a few different places, but, I try to get a couple of tips out every week on Instagram. It's kind of mixed in there with some barbecue and mountain biking, but,
love it.
There's some good stuff in there as well.
Awesome. Hey, Mark, the golf yogi, thanks again for joining the Course of Life. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Alex.
This week's featured conversation with Mark Williamson was brought to you by our new partner at Groovit Golf, creators of the Groovit Golf Brush. The Groovit Brush is unique to golf accessories because of its patented pump that sprays water or your choice of cleaning solution onto the club face prior to scrubbing. So it's easy to refill or on the go around the course or at the range. Detachable magnets allow ultimate mobility on your bag when the clubs need a cleaning. Plus, the brush comes with a 3-year bristle guarantee. If you can wear out the brush head cleaning golf clubs in 3 years, send it back and Groovit Golf will get you a free replacement. The Groovit Brush ensures maximum backspin, distance, and accuracy with each shot. Prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control that clean grooves will give you. Using your existing golf clubs with the Groovit, you will get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you've been looking for. Check out the Groovit Brush at groovitbrush.com and get it today. Great chat there with Mark Williamson. Putting while he's smoking meats in his backyard on his putting greens.
What a combo. Isn't that great? Just picture that, Mike. Imagine if I just gave you a custom putting green, a grill, and a smoker in your back patio. You'd be out there all day. Where would you go? What would you do with yourself?
What did we do wrong in life, Alex? What did we do wrong?
Yeah, now shout out to Mark because obviously, you know, he did everything he could to, you know, get out on the tour and make a full-time living of playing the game. You know, was on the mini tours for a long time and talked with a lot of people that have been great guests on this show before. But, you know, he transitioned to the yoga brand and the golf fitness aspect because he realized the importance of it and teaches it a bunch now out in the Scottsdale area. So if you're out there, give him a visit, give him a holler, and check out his classes and check out the work he's doing on his social media as well. So great having Mark on for sure.
Love it. Let's talk a little football. The XFL, of course, is still going on.
Oh, yeah.
It's still there.
It's all right. I've tuned in occasionally. You know, nothing crazy.
It's football.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Tom Brady.
Yes, and the Zapruder film of the week here that we're going to overanalyze because we have to.
We are indeed. Yeah. So Brady, Edelman, and Jimmy Fallon?
Yes. What a group. I love the surprise and your reaction. What, asking not about Brady and Edelman, you're like, is that Jimmy Fallon on the
is
right?
Is that Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah, they're just hanging out at a Syracuse basketball game, the three
Did
of them.
Jimmy Fallon go to Syracuse?
I don't know what the tie is there, but it was a big enough game. I don't know. They have a private jet access. They all have close access to the city of New York, so they can make it happen.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. All right. So.
But anyways, they were there. Yeah. They were sitting front row. There was a camera on them. Brief pan over to them. And it briefly looked like Julian Edelman was answering something from Jimmy Fallon and said the words, "He's coming back. He's coming back," as he was laughing. So basically, it seemed like they caught a candid moment where Julian Edelman was referring to Tom Brady returning to
He's
not only the NFL,
back.
But
He's
the Patriots. That's what everyone thought. However, you turn over to Brady, and Brady looks just – I don't know how you would like to describe Brady's emotions, but he looked very perturbed and bothered by that being on camera.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, Mike, we've created the new Laurel versus Yanny of what Brady actually muttered under his breath. I'm not really sure where I fall on this one. It's very confusing.
Yeah, the two options are either this guy.
Yeah, like he either says this guy, Jules, you know, I'm blowing into the world, and I'm coming back and playing with my best friend again for another couple of years, which would be great. You know?
Or he said he's not.
it looks very similar in the lip movement. I mean, he's not coming back. He's not going back to New England. He's going somewhere else. I'm taking the money. I'm leaving. I'm sick of being underpaid. I'm gone.
Getting paid.
I'll see you later, Jules.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's the Laurel versus Yanny. Like I said, is the dress, you know, white or is it blue? You know, it's like one of those random ones on the internet. It's really up to your interpretation. The NFL Network singled out the audio, Mike. They like dropped all the background audio. It's still not super clear. It seems like he's not. I can't really tell, though. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1. He's at MWRINC because we both commented on this and I posted it over the weekend. So take a look at the video and tell us your thoughts because I'm curious to hear what everyone thinks about that and Brady's decision as well because we're 2 weeks away from it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll know in a couple of weeks what he's actually going to do, but damn it, it looked like he's not to me.
I feel like he's really enjoying playing this game. I don't know.
I mean, at the same time, he might have said he's not, but he's playing along at the same time, which I would, you know, 100% believe Tom Brady is doing.
He's trying to squeeze every single dollar out of this next contract, no matter who gives it to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it's just, yeah. We're not in Bill Belichick territory here where he's just going to be like, well, you know, I'm going to play the game to the best of my abilities, no matter where I am. And
no, it's decision time, Mike. We're getting down the wire here. I'm getting a little antsy just thinking about it.
Speaking of getting down to the wire, let's talk some baseball because it is spring training still.
Yes.
Games are in full swing.
Astros still getting plucked, by the way.
Astros.
In the last week.
Let's talk about the Astros here first. Yeah. So let's talk about why it's going to be awesome to watch the Astros this season just from the spring training game so far. So first, we have that video of that guy yelling into the Astros dugout. You saw this one where it's like, you gotta give the trophy back? You're gonna give the MVP back?
Yeah, do it for the kids.
You guys gonna keep your rings?
Be honest. Be a gentleman. You know, show my kids how it's done.
Yeah, that one too. There's that one. A guy yelling at the Astros players during when they're at bat. And did you see the one on ESPN where they mic'd up Anthony Rizzo? And which is also, by the way, just what they need to do in baseball all the time.
Basically, they just threw a mic on Anthony Rizzo for his at bat in a spring training.
And an earpiece so he could talk with the everyone in the booth.
I love that. They've been doing it for the warm-ups in NBA games, but I hadn't seen it in-game MLB yet.
This was just so good because he was talking to them while he's in the batter's box. And he's like, I'm doing some math in my head to figure out what he's going to throw. I don't know. And then he goes, somebody bang for me.
Oh, gosh. Wow. Shout out to the Astros and the trash can banger that was divulging pitches for them during that scandal.
This is fantastic.
Love it. Anthony Rizzo mic'd up. Good stuff. Hopefully we see more of that in spring training. It's nice just getting the tropical vibes of the palm trees in Fort Myers blowing in the wind. You know, you get some shots at Arizona. So it's definitely that time of season to relax and enjoy meaningless baseball.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Meanwhile, my Yankees may get to start the season without Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton, but I'm not worried. They're still going to win the pennant.
Yeah, and the Red Sox, I have no expectations for them. Chris Sale now reporting more elbow issue, Mike. That could be Tommy John's situation.
Gone. He's gone.
Not gone at all. Yeah.
The good news is you usually come back real strong from Tommy John surgery.
Oh, yeah. Years later.
Albeit 2 years later, but you're back.
Yeah, I'll have graders by then if I don't already have a few on my side.
There you go. Let's talk about something we don't usually talk about on the podcast. Let's talk a little basketball.
That's right. And it has nothing to do with the game. It has everything to do with the celebrity that goes to games regularly.
This was just this came across our Twitter, our good friend. A good friend, Seth, posted on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Seth Rothman. Yes,
Seth Rothman. Yes. The statement from the Knicks about Spike Lee.
Yeah. So Spike Lee is a celebrity movie maker, 40 Acres and a Mule, the whole thing. you know, Academy Awards, all that.
Knicks fan.
Legendary Knicks fan.
Knicks fan.
Courtside, front row, every single game, chirping
game.
Reggie Miller since the 90s, chirping Jordan, chirps every away team. He's famous for that.
Yes.
Apparently, there's a like special entrance that he goes in and had been going in for years, and it's not like the stereotypical, like, I'm a VIP, you know, put my wristband on me and walk me to my courtside seats. It's not that typical entrance. And apparently, there was some sort of scuffle recently at a Knicks game regarding him doing this, and it finally came to the attention of the team. And basically, they kind of swiftly worded the idea that they wanted him going in the normal celebrity entrance, is the gist of what I got for the beginning of the controversy.
Yeah, it's just... First of all, part of me is like, treat everyone equally. If the VIP is going to the VIP entrance, they go in the VIP entrance. Another part of me is like, you're really going to embarrass your organization around Spike Lee.
And they're the most popular fan. I would argue most famous
fan
in the NBA.
He is the face of the fandom.
Exactly. And to punish him, now he's threatening not to go to Knicks games now. It's a whole scene. It's gone out of control fast.
It's embarrassing.
It is. It's
embarrassing.
It's like, why do we even care to ruin that? That it's just one person entering the stadium. No one cares that he's going in that door.
Let me just say this to Spike Lee. Let me just tell Spike Lee this. You can come in whatever entrance you want in Yankee Stadium. You're always welcome at Yankee Stadium.
I like that. I thought you were going to go the business angle and be like, "If Spike Lee, if you ever want to meet with me to discuss any videography projects I can help with."
That's fine, too. We know a guy. we went to school with the Oscar winner who wrote the screenplay for Spike Lee's Black Klansman.
Yes, that's right. Good call out to our QU alum.
We got a connection here. Let's set it up and make it happen.
Was that a seamless transition to my alma mater note of the week as well?
Quinnipiac. Too? Let's talk Quinnipiac.
Yeah, not only are we getting shouted out all across Super Tuesday, polls everywhere with the Quinnipiac polls. University name on it, but we had a buzzer beater, Mike, from our basketball team, our men's basketball team, which is just another year of underperforming for that team. I'm getting very upset. They're not even really sniffing March Madness as we enter that magical month now, but they had a buzzer beater and a fantastic win, a walk-off three for the win. And it's nice just to see some sort of highlight from that team this year. So shout out to the Bobcats.
Yes. It is. No buzzer beater in Bobcat history will match the half court run off the court buzzer beater that happened during our tenure, though.
Oh, yeah. Who was that? DeAndre. What was his face there? Man. Number zero.
I don't remember.
Shout out to our former Bobcat that had a half court buzzer beater as well.
Throwing the half court shot against a team that he transferred away from to come join the Bobcats.
Good times, indeed. That was our alma mater shout out. Let's hashtag always end with food for the last couple
always
of minutes.
Always end with food.
Because,
yes.
Mike, I wanted to congratulate you and your wife as well. Wife had a great work milestone as well. So you guys celebrated last night. And you sent me the most gluttonous picture of food that I had seen this decade. It's early starts of the decade, Mike, but this decade is number one. And I went on a food bender in Scottsdale. But just explain to me where you guys went and what you actually sent me there. I'm still trying to wrap my head around
First of all, we're on a diet.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. But, you sent me that picture literally while I was on the treadmill, by the way.
Yes.
I forgot to tell you that.
We said, screw the diet. big congrats to my wife. She got her tenure officially.
It's a nice word like that.
So huge, huge accomplishment there for her. Real proud of her. Real happy to be the mister in this relationship.
You're just there for the ride.
The other half.
Yeah.
I'm just here for the ride. So we went out to dinner to a restaurant called Hitch here in Savannah. And I got hot chicken and waffles, some fried chicken on top of waffles with hot sauce and maple syrup. And she got something that we usually we just get this appetizer and we split it. And it was, they call it a loaded nachos or something. It's not nachos. It's waffle fries, fried chicken, pickles, bacon, cheddar cheese, sour cream, and a balsamic reduction.
Yeah. And it essentially looked like a gigantic Belgian waffle just with a plate of like tater tot nachos on top is what I can see from a distance.
That's one way to look
at it. It was a plate of gold.
It is fantastic. It is. I will say we haven't had it in quite a while, maybe 2 years, and especially not since we kind of started dieting a little bit more.
Quote, unquote,
and
yeah.
Both of us, I think, felt it last night and this morning.
Yeah, I just pulled up the text, Mike. As soon as I saw it, I said, this is a blob of happiness. That's what that is.
I will post the picture on our Facebook page.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's at Course of Life Podcast on Facebook if you want to see that. And that's just pure gluttony at its finest. We have a great place in Austin here that does donut burgers. Shout out to Gordo's. Like
I've heard of those.
Bacon cheeseburger with a glazed donut as the patty on either end.
Yes.
That's pure gluttony as well, too. So it reminds me of that, too. But great meal indeed to celebrate. Hashtag always end with food here on the podcast.
Always.
That was Course of Life for this week. Another jam-packed episode coming next week. We're getting closer to the match play. A lot more content to come there from my trip to Arizona. Still more interviews
players
to
spill championship.
Out. And the Players' Championship, the Island Green. So much to get excited for next week.
Yes.
It's going to be a good one. For Mike, I'm Alex. Everyone have a good week.